Okay, good morning everybody, and welcome to this session on growth chambers and environmental control. My name is Michelle McKeown-Bennett. I'm your moderator for this morning's session, and I'm also your first speaker. I come from Limerick Institute of Technology in Ireland, and just if anyone doesn't know where Ireland is, it's on the westmost island of Europe. Okay? So just a little bit about myself. I'm the head of Department of Applied Science in Limerick Institute of Technology. Before that, I was a research fellow for a year in the Kennedy Space Centre Space Life Science Laboratory under the guidance of Dr. Raymond Wheeler. When I returned to LIT, I set up the Controlled Environment Laboratory for Life Sciences in Ireland. It's the first of its kind in Ireland. And I'm currently completing my PhD part-time in Trinity College Dublin. So the project I'm presenting today is looking at sphagnum moss, and specifically looking at it as transplanting it as a growth medium applying it to advanced life support systems and possible horticultural applications. So the sphagnum moss that I used was taken from the raised bog at Clara, County Offaly in Ireland. This is a very unique bog in that it's the last of its kind left in Europe with a complete acrotherm. The importance of Ireland and sphagnum is that Ireland, while it can fit into Florida 10 times, holds 54% of the world's raised bog population. The project came about by accident, really. I was working on another project and had left some samples in the dark for 12 months, had completely forgotten about them. And I just was rooting around and found it, and I couldn't believe what I saw. I saw sphagnum moss growing green in the dark with no nutrient solution, refresh, no oxygen getting into it at all. This was a very, very unique discovery. When I opened the lid, the atmosphere seemed to have changed. The sphagnum didn't cope with this. It actually started to die back. It replaced the lid, put it back in the dark for a week, and came back, and the new sphagnum plants were growing very well. So just a little bit about sphagnum moss. It is a bryophyte. It has no root zone, and a lot of the nutrients that it gets is through wicking from the water. The bogs are actually quite wet, and the sphagnum once dried can be anything between 2 to 3% dry mass. It can hold up to 98% water, depending on the species. It is important to know that sometimes it's referred to as a living and a dead portions of the plant, and there is the aerobic part and the anaerobic part. And as you can see here in the diagram, that this is sphagnum cuspidatum, the plants can be quite long under the water. Okay, four sphagnum species were used based on where they're located and they're in other words, their growing environment. Sphagnum cuspidatum, as I've mentioned, is in pools. It's normally classified as a bog maker because it grows quite fast within the actual bog pools. Sphagnum magellanicum is also similar in that it grows quite rapidly, but in hummocks, it forms hummocks. It doesn't like being in the water. It grows above the water level. Sphagnum papillosum, it likes the drier areas, but also nutrient-rich areas. Nutrient-rich is not very common in bogs. Okay, they're a very nutrient-poor environment. And sphagnum phallax, which again is nutrient-rich. It likes nitrogen specifically, and you can find this in pools. So we have a nice balance between nutrient-rich, nutrient-poor, and pool living and hummock forming. So these plants had to be transplanted from Ireland, and we grew them then. Once we transferred them over from Ireland to Kennedy Space Centre, we grew them in a conviron growth chamber at the conditions that you can see here. The most important point here is that we used a modified Hoagland solution. This was required because initially when we used the standard Hoagland solution, we experienced salting out. The salts were actually appearing on top of the sphagnum, so the sphagnum was not tolerating them quite well. It was a dynamic flow-through system rather than static. So we modified it based on the bog water that we had taken with the plants and rebalanced the nitrogen salts, added in some chlorine, and increased the borate and magnesium content in the micronutrients. So just to show you here the profile of the growth rate. The sphagnum, it took a little bit of time to establish because, it had been left in the sun for about 3 days on Miami's airport, so it didn't really like that. So it took a little bit of time to establish itself again, and the EC profile shows that after a portion of time, it was able to re-establish the exchange that happens on a cellular level within the plants. On the left-hand side, we see pH. Now, there's two lines here. Again, one is the nutrient reservoir and the nutrient tank. The nutrient reservoir fed the tank that the sphagnum was in, and also it acted as a kind of a control. While the actual nutrient was being fed back into this tank, it was actually going on the surface of the system because a lot of the water would have been withheld intrinsically within the plant. So we could see by taking nutrient solution from the tank and nutrient solution from the reservoir, the sphagnum was driving the pH down. Sphagnum lives in a pH of about 3 to 3.5 normally. Within the first few weeks, it took a little bit of time to do this, but once it had established itself, it drove it down within the day of changing out the nutrient solution. Okay. This is a very important aspect of this because it means that the plant can actually act as a buffering medium. So just we couldn't establish the growth rate correctly in the first tank, so we established a second tank, weeding out a lot of the other plants that had invaded the species. This was done back in Limerick, and we took then the living or the aerobic portion and placed it within the growing tubes, and then we took the anaerobic portion and established it as a base for the growing of the plant. We also, and this was to ensure that the tubes were not pushed up, which had happened in the previous example. We established or determined that a 2 to 3 centimetre per week growth rate was possible using increased CO2 in that rate. This was also replicated on the actual bog surface in Clara, where we put a Perspex box, and while we didn't increase the CO2 directly, the oxygen and the gases were not allowed to escape, we did actually experience a significant raise in the sphagnum surface compared to the surrounding bog. Okay, so just applying this to a growth system and focusing on waste recycling, because this is where I think the sphagnum can really help with horticulturalists, is using this as a direct buffer for use of waste water. The experiment design was set up with 5 trays, 45 samples per tray. We used sphagnum cuspidatum because at this stage in America, the sphagnum cuspidatum had completely taken over the rest of the tank, so it was the strongest, survival of the fittest, essentially. It is very rugged in that it is a little bit stronger than some of the other plants, and it seemed to adapt better to the ionic and pH changes. So we used lettuce cultivar Philandria for this, and the 5 trays consisted, as we can see here, we had Rockwell as a control with the modified Hoaglands. We had tray 2 then had the living sphagnum portion, which again is the green area, with Hoaglands. We had tray 3 that had the dead or anaerobic portion of the plant and Hoaglands. Tray 4 had the living sphagnum with a urine simulate. Tray 5 had dead sphagnum with a urine simulate. So just looking at the growth parameters here, we had increased the CO2 to 1200 ppm. We modified the Hoaglands again, just increasing up the concentration again so that the lettuce would not suffer from lack of nutrients. Also, the big difference here is the pH is 5.6, and the urine simulate salts were also included, which means that we were directly raising the salt content of the solution using this. We didn't include organics, including the urea, because we felt that, okay, this would be too much of an overload for that particular system at one time. So sampling occurred at day 7, 14, 21, and 28. However, the plants at day 7 were a little bit too small, so they're not included in the data here. So just to look at the fresh weight yield, we can see, this is a normalised view, we can see that the control actually did better than all 4 sphagnum trays. But however, the strange thing about it is that the other trays had a higher percentage biomass than the control. So while the plants are physically larger, the nutrient content and the physical carbon included in the plants grown and the sphagnum trays is higher than the control, and as this is replicated again into percentage carbon. Also then the nutrient uptake by the plants, in most instances of the elements, the actual control did not do as good as the other trays. So we had a direct transfer or an increased transfer of nutrients to the lettuce plants through the sphagnum than we did in the control. So again, control, larger plants, but not as healthy. So this is just showing you the 28 day, days after planting harvest. Tray one is the control, again, Rockwool and the Hoagland solution. Tray two is the sphagnum, living sphagnum with Hoagland's. Tray three, dead sphagnum with Hoagland's. Tray four, the living sphagnum with urine similate. And tray five, the dead sphagnum with urine similate. While you can probably see a difference in size, all right, there is a slight lighter colour in the tray one. All right. Now, unfortunately, we didn't take reliable chlorophyll content, so this will be repeated again. But the actual plants on the tray five significantly were a lot greener looking. So just also to mention that the advantage of using this is that we can actually do root zone analysis based on the sphagnum, because it's very easy to remove the roots even at day 28. And in Rockwool, it is very, very hard. You can't actually save the roots. So we can actually harvest roots from this and they're not contaminated by any other medium. So in conclusion, we have little or no algae contamination, which is sometimes seen in other tests. We had a higher biomass observed in the lettuce from the sphagnum trays, especially in trays 4 and 5. There was a higher nutrient content in the lettuce. There was little or no tip burn. Surprisingly, in tray 5, or sorry, tray 1, the control at the end of the day, there was significant tip burn, and even the centre of the plants were quite badly damaged, whereas with the other plants, we had very little tip burn, and the plants were a lot healthier. The living sphagnum would probably be the best to use with the urine simulate, just based on the nutrient analysis, but only slightly. So if this was to go to be used as a medium for space flight, the dead sphagnum would probably be better, because you can dry this out and desiccate it, and we've done this testing as well. It is very easy to dry it out as the plant and re-wet it, and the plant itself re-establishes itself. Now, the final thing then, I suppose, so if we really wanted to use this, it's probably best to apply it to hydroponic systems where horticulturalists wanted to use wastewater to feed their plants, because number one, it's a cost-effective mechanism. You're reutilizing old waste or runoff from a composting situation, so it actually is a direct use for the system. So current investigations, finally, we're repeating the sphagnum growth rate again. The lettuce trial has been repeated to include a chlorophyll and osmotic change analysis, just to see exactly what's going on at the root zone between the sphagnum and the lettuce, because the nutrient exchange and nutrient content is raising a few questions. If it is going to go to space, then microgravity tests, stress effects on the cuspid atom would have to be done. Now, we've done this in Limerick Institute of Technology with the guidance of Dr. Gary Studi, who is a Marie Curie Fellow with us at the moment, and for another experiment. So this is something that can be done easily, and then if it's successful, we can apply for flight on the ISS. Finally, as part of Trinity College, I'm doing microbial profiling of the lettuce system and the growth tank, because we found a few nice microbes that I can't announce today, but it is a first for Ireland, so it's very, very exciting. So, Gaurav Mahagov, which is thank you in Irish, and this is a beautiful picture of Clara Bog, and if there's any questions, I can take them now. Well, actually, one question. As moderator, I have to watch the time as well. So if anyone has a question. Jaya.
Yeah. Do you have similar
No, that's why, just to record the question, peat-based potting media sometimes takes bit more time re-wetting when it's dried out. So with sphagnum, because it's still part of the plant, the structure is still intact. A lot of the time with the peat moss, you have a lot of the structure is destroyed. The other thing to note about sphagnum is that it does do a cellular exchange. So once you have a relatively intact amount of the cell, it'll still re-wet. Even a leaf, if you re-wet a leaf under a microscope, you'll actually see it swelling back up because it has vacuoles in it that literally absorb all the water. Okay? All right? Okay, thank you so much. And we're going to take the next speaker now.